Are you ready for a wild and hilarious ride through World of Crime?
Then look no further, because our podcast, Two Boxes of Wine and a Crime, is here.
Join me, Tasha.
And me, Trisha.
Two ex-cons who love
wine, coke, and crime.
As we unravel cold case murder cases drunk off our ass.
Each episode, we invite you to grab a box of wine.
As we use Google, humor,
and of course, cocaine.
To crack the toughest unsolved crimes.
Drunk off our ass.
From small town homicides
to 9/11. We have it all figured out.
Or at least we think we do.
Listen as the mystery deepens.
The laughter gets louder.
And of course, cocaine.
And the wine starts flowing.
Drunk off our ass.
In our entertaining, illegal, and
unforgettable podcast.
So join me, Tasha.
And me, Trisha.
On a coke-fueled journey to serve justice.
With two boxes of wine and a crime.
Available now on your favorite podcast app.
Subscribe and tune in every
Tuesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday for new episodes.
Drunk off our ass.
I remember being in at a Peter O'Toole gave an interview at the Galway Film Flat. This is a few years before his death.
I
really
hope
entertaining.
So.
He's very erudite. Great story. Yeah, well, he was a great storyteller. But before he came out on stage, there was a complete mess up with the microphones, and his microphone was on before he came out on stage, and he was doing what probably all good actors do, and he was clearing his throat. Before he came out on stage, and everyone in the packed house. Oh, and they were just, everyone was just looking at each other going, oh, Jesus Christ. Oh, this is, it was just an honest mistake by someone, but it was really something that you might see in a mockumentary.
I'll use small words that you'll be sure to understand, you warthog-faced buffoon.
What you just said is one of the most insanely idiotic things I have ever heard. Everyone in this room is now dumber for having listened to it.
What did you say?
You are a sad, strange little man.
Don't call me stupid.
Hello, and welcome to The Best Bits, a movie podcast where each week we pick our favorite scenes from randomly selected and weirdly specific themes. This is your co-host, Will, a writer of three films plus a Christmas special, and I'm joined, once again, by our co-host and writer of three one-and-a-bit films and
Take
three
two.
And a bit episodes of TV. This is your co-host. Kevin.
Yes, I'm here.
Kevin, how are you?
Everybody knows that I've only written one film. I don't need you to keep telling them that, Will.
Well, no, the truth is you've written more than one film. It's just like you've had one and a bit feature films produced. That's a big difference.
That's one of the nicest things anyone's ever said to me. That's also one of the saddest things I've ever heard.
That's more, like, come here, that's more than a lot of people have had produced, Kevin. So, we're all damn lucky if we get anything made. Kevin, what's the crack? How are we getting on?
I'm fantastic. I'm absolutely stark bollock naked and I'm ready to go.
You know what I've been doing? Do you know what I've been doing for the weekend?
You have been watching a lot of mockumentary scenes.
Films, actually. I've watched the complete film and I've watched lots of scenes. So that's what I've been doing, not at the weekend, at night.
Do you want to know what I've been doing?
And what have you been doing?
I've been editing fight scenes non-stop. Just...
You know, I think we recorded fight scenes a month ago. We recorded it a month ago and you're still editing it. So I hope that whoever's listening to this will appreciate the amount of effort that Kevin actually has put into fight scenes, because you'll never get the same amount of effort from me.
When I listened back to me going, we're going to go 12 rounds, I thought, you fucking idiot. Stop it. Why did you do that?
When you said it to me beforehand, I just went, 12 rounds? Jesus Christ, you're getting yourself into trouble here, man.
I should have just said rounds. Oh, God.
Well, I am not going to... Hopefully, I won't make the same mistake tonight. And I am going to go through a very breezy, light, non-film professor-ish chat through my favourite... mockumentary.
Well,
scenes.
I can tell you that this is the first time that I've ever gotten on the mic and not had a scene in mind. And this isn't me like setting you up for like me to pull a fast one. I genuinely could pick a number of ones, and I don't know at this moment still as we're recording, I don't know what I'm going to pick. So I was going to basically hope that you had some good suggestions, and then I would just pinch those and go, yeah, that's my one as well. So I'm totally unprepared for this episode as well.
Man, I'm so glad you said that, because honestly, I had a tough time. Like, right up to the record of this, I was going through scenes and I was kind of going, well, what's my best bit? So I think the way I'm going to handle it is I'm going to just present several scenes that stood out to me and a kind of an idea that became very present in my mind when that stood out to me when I was watching some of these films over the weekend. And I just went, oh, I'd like to talk about that ultimately, hopefully.
Best way to do it.
But before I get into that, I know, because I got insider knowledge, that you actually have made a mockumentary in the past, haven't you?
I did, yeah. In
what
college, we did student films. We shot them on 16mm film. And the very first thing that I ever made was a mock doc called The Making of Scared Stiff. And it was about... It was basically like a fake bonus features documentary on a fictional horror film that had gone called Scared Stiff, that had gone tits up, and all the bullshit that was being presented by the director and the cast and crew, talking about what a wonderful experience they had, blah, blah, blah. Very easy, sort of like low-hanging fruit. But yeah, it got into the Cork Film Festival. It was an absolute blast to make. But yeah, it was a mockumentary. Right. And it's not particularly that good. I don't actually have any... copies of it, like on a hard drive that I could cut into this or give to you to cut in. I've got it on 60mm film, I've got it on DV, and I've got it on tape. So thankfully, there's no clip to play.
Oh man, I was thinking about the mockumentary form, and I was thinking that it's a go-to one for student filmmakers, because it's easy to be a little bit
satirical, I suppose.
Satirical, yeah, and comedic, and it's kind of like play up tropes and genres and things that that are prevalent in films and whatnot.
It's just easy juxtaposition between what's real and what's fake. So you immediately get those laughs. And I think it lends itself really, really favourably to comedy mockumentaries.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Even though it's not, you know, it's not exclusive to comedy, the mockumentary. You know, there's been so many.
But I was wondering, as you're saying that, would you count The Blair Witch as a mockumentary?
Oh, I would. I think it's found footage. I'm avoiding the found footage genre because I think that's a whole topic to itself.
It feels like a much more important found footage film than in any way sort of like a blurry version of a mockumentary, I suppose.
Yeah, like they're a different, and they lend themselves to the horror genre. You know, whereas the mockumentary lends itself to more easily to the comedy genre, the found footage. Like there's Cannibal Holocaust, there's Cloverfield, I suppose, Paranormal Activity, Blair Witch, doesn't, you know, all of those. Chronicle is kind of a superhero horror, I would say, maybe. Trollhunter is another one.
Yeah, definitely. Those are found footage, aren't they? You don't really have the narrator as part of the storyline, as it were. But then Threads as well. I was wondering whether that would count as a mockumentary. Because when you hear mockumentary, I do anyway, I immediately think comedy, like ironic comedies. Mm-hmm. But fake documentaries like Threads or even Ghost Watch.
I don't know what to do. Should we go back upstairs? Upstairs. Children, come on.
No, Sarah, stay where you are, please. Sarah, stay there, please. Don't go upstairs.
Why?
Because we hear that Suzanne's got out of bed, but she's not yet
appeared. Stay here, I don't know
she's
why.
She's not appeared on the landing.
The BBC, yes. Sort of Orson Welles-ish inspired prank that was done, which scared the bejesus out of me when I saw it as a kid. I wonder whether that would count.
It's definitely... When you evoke the name Orson Welles, you're kind of evoking kind of like one of the originators of this genre in a way. And I was going to bring it up, and I'm kind of glad you mentioned it. I was kind of saying, will I bring it up, because it's not really mockumentary, but I think it's worth mentioning, because in this century, Orson Welles' infamous, you know, radio broadcast of War of the Worlds is, I think, a big influence on this prank, because they're practical jokes, right? They're jokes, mockumentaries are about someone's being tricked along the way, right? And, you know, and it's about capturing kind of like reality, or making someone feel like reality is happening.
Not always, because you do have the ones where...
Not all of them, no.
Everyone is an actor in it. But I get what you mean.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, but everyone's an actor. But you know what the gas thing about the whole Orson Welles thing is, War of the Worlds broadcast, is that, you know, it's kind of famous that, you know, people listened to this broadcast at the time. And it was a broadcast basically where a regular radio show was interrupted, and they just went to a reporter in the field who says, oh my God, this object's falling from the sky, and these aliens basically start killing everyone. And in real life, several people were killed. You know, people thought this was happening for real, and it all went a bit pear-shaped. And the following few days, Orson Welles had to come on air and apologize. But did you know, and this is the mad thing, is that that same broadcast was adapted for in South America several times over the coming decades, and the same thing happened. So, wow. Like, it was done in Brazil and Chile, yeah. And I think in Chile, people did die. I think there was a riot. I think people did take to the streets on the night, and there were deaths, like, you know.
Well, just, you know, to bring it back to Ghostwatch, when I was watching that, this was 1993 or 92, I think it was. And I was obviously, like, a kid who didn't have any sense or any access to the internet. So when I was watching that... And Sarah Green, who was presenter of children's television, when she disappeared at the end of it, I was thinking, you know, it's going to pop up on the news. So sit around and wait for the news to come on to find out what's happened to Sarah Green. Because I was totally duped by that. So obviously I was a child. Yeah. So, but yeah, I can imagine how...
A lot of people were.
You implicitly trust authority figures to be telling you the truth, which is probably why we've gotten into so much trouble over the last few years with... YouTube and all the bullshit that gets spewed on that. Yeah, it makes sense to me that people would get duped by War of the Worlds recordings.
That's a really good point, because it kind of relies on the fact that we are used to seeing kind of like stoic, serious, accurate information being portrayed to us in a documentary form. But they're flipping this, and they're having us, they're basically kind of presenting it. They're trying to trick us in some of these films. They're trying to trick us. Like, have you ever seen, for instance, and I watched this actually at the weekend, Peter Jackson's mockumentary called Forgotten Silver.
Behind me is the house of an elderly lady called Hannah McKenzie. What I found sitting right here was an old chest, and I found the most extraordinary collection of films. I had no way of realizing the significance of these films at the time.
Here, seen for the very first time, is the only motion picture film shot by a New Zealander at Gallipoli. Brooks' camera focuses on the human face of warfare.
This unknown genius who died in obscurity and who now belongs, you know, in the pantheon of great cinema artists and innovators.
It's a treasure trove of major historic importance worldwide.
I didn't know he had a mockumentary.
Oh man, it's so well worth watching. He, in the mid-90s, right, as he was waiting for, I think it was before The Frighteners or something like that, he basically had, and I'm completely misremembering this information, because it's information from years ago. He basically had the time and the means to be able to just kind of like, he got a notion of doing this mockumentary, and he created this story, and it's really good, about... he's basically discovered in his neighbor's, in Peter Jackson's real life neighbor's home neighbor's garden, in her shed, he found a chest of like old 35mm footage, you know, and it was just on the cusp of being disintegrating. And he takes it to the New Zealand Film Institute and has it restored, and basically what he finds is a treasure trove of footage of a man who basically pioneered international cinema. And by this one guy called Colin McKenzie in New Zealand. And he basically got there before everyone else. He invented, first of all, he made his own He made his own film stock. He was the first man to make colorized film. He was the first man to do talkies.
Even I was getting duped as you were saying that. I was thinking, is that true?
Yeah. But you would watch it. But the gas thing about it is, if you watch it, and it's on YouTube, it's well worth a watch. If you watch it, you will actually kind of go, oh, hang on a second, is this real? And the first time that you kind of realize that this might be a bit of a joke is when they're interviewing Colin McKenzie's like fictional granddaughter, and she's talking about how he made film stock or the emulsion using eggs. So he would he had to use, it was like a dozen eggs for a foot of film stock.
Well, he was clever enough to make his own film. He got flax leaves from down the swamp at the back of the farm, and he boiled them, turned that into cellulose nitrate, and then he had to find something for the emulsion, and he found eggs.
Not eggs, egg whites. He used the egg albumen process, which they used in the 19th century for making materials photosensitive. He adapted that, though, to use for moving images.
Trouble was that it took 12 eggs to make 1 minute of film. That's all right, as long as he was making short films.
Colin was caught red-handed. The precocious boy had been planning the world's first feature-length film.
Colin's father flew into a rage. This was an affront to his dignity. He ranted and he raved. And he smashed up all of Colin's gear. Everything was destroyed. Everything, all his gear, except the camera, which his clever mother had hidden.
And you just know when that happens, you go, hang on a second, someone's taking a piss here. This is a joke. But it's very convincing. And he recreated, he mocked up that footage. So it's actually very creative filmmaking by Peter Jackson in this period, just before The Frighteners or just after Brain Dead and all those sort of
things. He went on from that to make They Shall Not Grow Old, which is also a mockumentary by all accounts. <It's not.
laughs> I don't think so.
Yeah,
I haven't seen that. But I just wanted to basically share, I wanted to share some of my kind of favorite scenes that I've seen. And the first one I want to go to is a mockumentary from 2014. And it is by Jermaine Clement and Taika Waititi, who went on to do, I don't know, they actually disappeared off the map after this. They did nothing after 2014. Yeah. I'm joking, you know, Taika Waititi, you know, they're huge. And it's What We Do in the Shadows.
Very good.
You've seen this, Kevin. It's fantastic. It's fantastic. It is. And it's, for anyone listening who doesn't know, What We Do in the Shadows is a mockumentary about vampire housemates, and they're just basically trying to cope with the complexities of modern life, and it's a show. And like, they're trying to like show their newly turned hipster like vampire kind of some of the perks of being undead. And it's so funny. It's so wonderful.
It is.
And the scene, my best bit from that film is the first few minutes of that film, is the introduction to this world.
Yes! Nighttime. So, now I'm going to wake up my flatmates. I really love living in a flatting situation. Wake up! Wake up, everyone! I like to hang out with other vampires. I like to company. Awaken! Awakey, wakey!
Where we have I can't remember the name of all the vampires, but we have Taika Waititi is kind of like the really kind of like clean and thoughtful, and he's the kind of the roommate that's kind of on top of things, and he's leading us through this world and showing us, introducing us to all the different roommates. And
how was your night last night?
I transformed into a dog and had sex.
Cool. We're going to have a little flat meeting in the kitchen in about 15 minutes, okay?
Okay.
What's gas is they're all different. All the different roommates are different versions of like cinematic vampires.
It's the Nosferatu guy that steals the show for me. He's sort of like complete psycho. Yeah.
Peter, wake up.
It's brilliant. Like, Jermaine Clement is kind of like a Gary Oldman, Francis Ford Coppola's Dracula, you know, Gary Oldman.
Ladislav! Oh, sorry.
Do you know what they were going to call the sequel to that? But they never made it. Obviously, they did the TV show, but they had a sequel that they were talking about. And you know what it was going to be called? Werewolves. Do you get it?
Werewolves.
Yeah, we are wolves, so it's werewolves.
Werewolves. Oh, God.
I thought that was genius. You'd almost have to make the film for that title alone.
It's Count Fegula.
hey, don't swear.
Sorry, they
yeah. We're werewolves.
Not swear.
What are we?
Werewolves, not werewolves.
No, it's
a very offensive word to call.
But you know what I love about this film is that it really straddles the line between comedy and horror, because the aesthetic,
you're
the
a
look
softie
of this
though,
horror,
Will.
It's terrifying.
It's not scary at all. Don't be silly.
Well, hang on a second. Peter, the Nosferatu guy, scared. When Taika Waititi's character pulls back that stone lid of his chamber, and I see Nosferatu lying there in repose, and he wakes up, and you just hear... And even Taika Waititi is kind of a little bit, okay, Peter, okay. You know, maybe you should clean up around here, Peter. You know, it's just, is this a spinal column? Yeah. I find that terrifying. But it's good.
It is good. That's not going to be from my pick, though.
Okay.
Yeah, okay. I really love that film, but yeah, keep going. I'm going to pick and choose here.
So, okay. Well, the next place I'm going to, and I'm kind of going straight, like there's other films, I'm just casually mentioning them, right? I'm just kind of saying these are other mockumentaries out there that I also enjoy. And I think so the other notable ones that I kind of want to just mention is like Popstar. I think that's really fun mockumentary.
Also, what the best scene from Popstar's Never Stop, Never Stopping is a deleted scene. And I don't know why they cut it. I assume because it was so sort of like over the top, but it's the fuck you song that they're singing at the children's concert. And it is absolutely fucking hilarious where they're singing, like, they're getting all these kids to sing along. It's like, I'm going to live forever and I'm going to dig your grave till the job is done. Yeah, all these children singing, like,
very good.
If your teacher's been a grumpasaurus, you just look him in the face and say, fuck off. Yeah.
Man, I haven't seen this.
You have to watch it. It's my favourite scene from that film, and it's cut from the film. But yeah, that's a brilliant mock doc.
It is so funny. Oh, there's actually another one I have to mention. And it is a kind of parody of The Beatles, which was made by Eric Idle in around 1978. But no, it was a TV special called around a band called The Ruttles. And it came out and it features, and I have to notice it because it predates Spinal Tap, but it also has a host of amazing cameos, like from Dan Aykroyd, Bill Murray, John Belushi, Mick Jagger, George Harrison gave his blessing. So it's an interest. It's not totally hilarious, but I definitely would say it's an interesting kind of curious oddity. So that's worth checking out, and I'm sure it's on YouTube, definitely.
The Ruttles story is a legend, a living legend.
I wanted to bring up one because this was one, I'm only bringing it up because I've only seen it once in the cinema, and I remember enjoying it in the cinema, but it's the only big budget animated mock doc. And do you know which one it is?
Is it the end credits of Toy Story 2?
No, this is the whole feature film is an actual mockumentary. And it's Surf's Up, the one starring Shia LaBeouf and having Jeff Bridges, about a surfing penguin.
As soon as there was the first wave, there was the first surfer. You know, all you needed was like a piece of driftwood or a block of ice, and you were off. And they were hooked, man. They were hooked.
Yeah, it's actually a sweet, you know, it's from that era of the mid-noughties of animated films. It's actually not
bad. I suppose
bad.
Everybody back then was taking their cues from The Office, the US version of The Office, which was really popular, and Modern Family, and Parks and Rec, where everything felt they were trying to do, that was a new form for the sitcoms in that period, was to create this sort of like omniscient documentary crew that was following them around.
I want to, there was one other mockumentary, and it was genuinely at the beginning I was thinking, this I kind of have to go to this, because it's such a, it was such a seminal moment for, not seminal, but it was such a wonderful cinematic moment, in which I remember watching this film in the cinema with a packed house, and everyone was just in hysterics from beginning to end, and I was with them. It's Borat.
Yak Shamash, my name is Borat. I'm journalist for Kazakhstan. My government sent me to USA to make a movie film. Please, you look.
And I'm just wondering, as you're saying that, because you just took the words out of my mouth, I'm just wondering whether we were in the same cinema together, because I saw that in Cork, and oh my God, holy hell. I came out of that screening in pain. I had never laughed for 90 odd minutes straight without a single breath. It was unreal.
It's such a I was in Galway, so we weren't in the same cinema. But looking back on the first one, I know the sequels come out this year, but that first one, it's so brave. It's like an act of a stunt. Like,
it was so dangerous what he was doing.
It's like, it was so dangerous. It was like watching Evel Knievel, because he was throwing himself into danger. And it was like, no, don't do this. Don't do this. From the scene, which I almost picked, the scene in which he's in a subway train. And he basically starts introducing himself to anyone and everyone in the train.
Hello, my name is Borat. I'm not American, I'm new in town. Nice to meet you. Hello, nice to meet you. Hey, what's your name?
My name is Mind Your Own Fucking Business.
And this one guy walks in, and he's got sunglasses, and he's got denim, and he's weathered and very beaten. And you know he's the guy you should not approach. And Borat gets up and he goes straight over and stands over and tries to kiss him. And oh my God, I'm surprised Sacha Baron Cohen didn't get the shit kicked out of him.
Well, hello, nice to meet you. And my name is Borat.
What's happening, man?
Nice to meet you. Yo, get the
fuck out of here before I break your jaw, bro. Yo,
okay.
Shut the fuck off.
Okay.
You're fucking with the wrong one, man.
Okay, sorry.
And then his suitcases open up and chickens just are unleashed inside this package. It's insane. It's insane.
All the memories are coming back from the different scenes. Like when he was at the, was it the mayor's office or he was at some dignitary's office, and he said to him that the cheese on the cracker came from.
We are a good friend, Boba, yes?
I hope so.
It is a custom. Have a cheese at the start.
Thank you.
My wife, she make this cheese.
Very nice.
She make it from a milk from her teeth.
The guy's face weak. He's trying not to. He's trying not to react. Oh my God, the pain. I remember as well, just like, because you may not mention it, but the sequel, it's very different. It's a lot more scripted. There's a moment in the sequel where he's at a photocopier place, and the guy is demonstrating the camera. He's demonstrating, is it the camera? Yeah, the camera that has internet access. And he gets on to porn. And Borat obviously doesn't have a clue what's going on. And he thinks, is that also dessert? Like, it's going to be at the restaurant serving. It's just his line deliveries. Oh, Jesus. He's fucking funny. He's so funny.
Like, his performance. Like, he's so measured. The only time in that thing where I think I see him breaking, right? And it's my favourite scene. Is when he goes for a driving lesson, right? And he meets this driving instructor, and this guy is as tough as nails. You can just know he's as tough as nails.
My name is Mike. I'm going to be your driving instructor. Welcome to our country, okay?
My name is Borat.
Okay, okay, good, good. Well, I'm not used to that, but that's fine. Now, you do know how to drive a little bit?
Yes.
Yes. Put it in D.
What?
Drive. Now, wait a second. Have you driven a car before?
Yes, okay. Many times.
All right, let's go this way. Wait a minute. I don't want you to go hitting anybody. You'll use two hands now.
What?
Two hands.
But then it looked like I am holding a gypsy while he eats my crumb.
I don't care what it looks like. You use two hands when you drive, okay?
But I admire the man he approaches.
Yeah.
And you can tell that Sasha, at the end of it, Sacha Baron Cohen admires him as well. Because everything Sacha... But at the start, you get the feeling that this guy is going to punch him before this is out. Because, you know, the way things have gone, he's so... This driving instructor seems so serious and so easily irritated that he's going to knock his lights out, you know, if he pushes his buttons. But no matter what Borat does to try and throw him off, like Borat...
Doesn't he ask him for advice on how to deal with road rage and something like, fuck your mother?
He initiates road rage.
Hey, don't look at me. Eat my teeth. We'll make a right turn up here.
Don't look at me like that. I will eat your shit. You fuck my mother.
Hey, hey, no, you can't.
No,
do
he
that.
Do before.
You
he look
can't
on
do
me.
That, okay? They're gonna throw us in jail. Me with you. You
why you in jail? He look on me. La la la. Behind.
You can't say
and
that.
And even there's time when he's passing a woman. There's this brilliant moment. It's so sexist, where they're driving along and Borat's a car passes them and has been driven by a woman.
Look, there is a woman in a car. Can we follow her? And maybe make a sexy time with her.
No. Why not?
Because a woman has a right to choose who she has sex with.
What?
How about that? Isn't that amazing?
You joke?
There must be consent. How about that? That's good, huh?
It's not good for me.
Oh, it is good.
Maybe we'll have sexy time. And I love the way... I love the way the driving instructor... Even in that moment,
he's
where
like,
it was just
yes.
like he could have easily gone
we
for,
can drive over here.
No, but he doesn't. He says. What I love about him is that he says, no, man, you need consent first. You know, he says, let's go make sexy time with this woman, and he says, no, man, you need
yeah.
consent first. Isn't that a good thing?
Oh God!
And he holds it, and you can see Sacha Baron Cohen actually kind of warming to him, and he actually kind of cracks at times. Like there's one or two times Sacha Baron Cohen almost cracks.
In the car.
Okay. You want to have a drink?
You can't drink that while you're driving. It's
why
against,
not?
It's against the law.
What? I like you. Do you like me?
I do like you.
You are my friend?
You're a nice young man, and I am your friend.
You will be my boyfriend.
I won't be your boyfriend.
Why not? You don't
well,
like
I can
me.
Be. Yeah, I can be. No boyfriend, yeah, I can.
Man, it's just, it's a the, great
those
scene
films,
because...
They also reveal sort of the quiet, like, decency of characters where... Some of them, he exposes yeah. sort of like the dark underbelly, but for some of them, you get these sort of like beautiful little insights into characters, like with the sequel,
yeah.
because that's the one that's very familiar to me right now, or fresh in my mind. There's there's a babysitter, a black woman, who is giving advice to Sacha Baron Cohen's daughter on sort of self-worth and not sort of giving in to pressure to change yourself, to get like massive breast implants or stuff like that. And it's just really sweet.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that she's sort of like encouraging yeah. her. Or the sort of the old Jewish lady who he comes in and he's basically like a raging anti-Semite. And rather than her like scolding him or whatever, she's basically sort of trying to show him that, look, I'm a good person and don't worry and you don't need to be afraid of me and all that kind of stuff. And it's so beautiful. It's so sort of like...
Yeah.
Like, lovely.
You're absolutely right. He exposes the inner person. Like, you know, whether, you know, and conversely, you know, when he, in Bruno...
Look at the four of us. We are so like the Sex and the City girls. Oh, no, we aren't either. Which one are you, Donnie?
I ain't either one of them. I'm Donnie.
That is such a Samantha thing to say.
It's so good. It's so good. It's when I think when it goes into the more scripted parts, this is so hard to even talk about. But like, what happened with the sequel is it kind of leaned into the scripted, and I had to use his daughter's character just because everyone knew who Borat was, and you know, it was just tougher. And I think when he's facing a real person, drawing out real humanity in them, that's when it's beautiful. When you see something magical happening between these two people, and it's completely improvised. One is a very conscious performer, and the other is just a normal, regular human being. And when it works, magic happens, and it's just special. And I could put that scene on again now, any of these scenes, and just be in hysterics.
Yeah. I forgot how funny and he really puts those scenes alone. Where, oh my God. Do you know what the thing is as well? There were two types of movies where if I watch them with my dad, we will need to be shifted because we cannot breathe from laughing. And they're the sort of the spoof, like Naked Gun or Hot Shot type films, and mockumentaries, the really good mockumentaries, because the laughs are just so deep and so severe that, my God. The fertility dance as well in the second one, where she's basically having her time of the month, and all these debutantes are watching her as. It's so. I remember watching that with my dad. I think it was around Christmas time, and. He went, Jesus Christ. Oh my God. He was genuinely like appalled. And I couldn't breathe. Oh God. Will, this podcast is going to be unusable. Stop laughing.
We can cut out so much of it. And you remind me of another scene in Borat that I just kind of. Another scene in Borat that I just fucking love because it's so unexpected. It's when he's being invited to a WASPy community dinner with all these kind of, well, you know, obviously kind of upper class people, very conservative and very WASPy. And everything going quiet, and he's kind of like not portraying, but he's talking about his manners, and he's learning his manners. I think that's what it is. And during the meal, he asks if he could go, excuses himself to go to the toilet. And he goes, and when he returns, he's holding a plastic bag with his shit in it. But the surprising moment in that is the woman takes him to the toilet.
It's so beautiful.
Instructs
it's weird
him
that it's beautiful, but and like, how to, the fact that, yeah,
isn't it?
But there was also a moment in that where he talked about that. What was it? There was something about he made a remark about the two women being really beautiful, but not the third one. And I thought, oh my God,
Jesus Christ!
Oh
God!
Yeah, but listen, the way that I've been laughing at this was the way that the whole cinema was laughing at Borat when it came out.
Yeah,
I'll never forget it because I felt like I remember when when they had the naked wrestling in the hotel room, and they were showing stuff on screen that it was best put in a horror movie, and people were screaming and choking on laughter at the same time, and it was just, it was like bedlam. It was absolute bedlam because people were still laughing about what they'd seen and trying to catch their breath, and more jokes were coming as they were running naked through the hotel and running into like into elevators and people like going, Jesus Christ, their backs up against the wall and not trying to react. Oh, fuck me.
What a lovely experience that was. You know, what experiencing a film
joy,
in the cinema.
Absolute
hilarious
joy.
Film in the cinema. Yeah. And that wave, the wave of laughter, as you said. And do you ever have a moment in a film where you're getting kinks at whatever happens on the screen And a few minutes later, just as you set yourself down, it comes back and hits you again. And you just erupts, the laughter just erupts out of yourself. And you're just doubling over laughing because you're trying to hold it in. And it's that film did it for me, definitely. So where I want to bring us next, and this is where I've been kind of like, I took my wagon when I was trying to find my best bits. And I'm, you know, and it was, it came to one undeniable name. And that name, of course, is Christopher Guest.
I'm so glad you said it, because I was sitting here waiting and thinking, when do I chip in? Because my favorite scene is coming from a Christopher Guest film. Okay. And I wonder whether we have the same one.
So where I'm going to is I'm taking a scene from each one of these, one of his kind of like his best films.
Love it.
And the first one, which is he co-starred in, but was directed by Rob Reiner, of course, is this is Spinal Tap. And we all know what the story behind Spinal Tap. It's, you know, it's the story of Spinal Tap. It's about the story of a fake documentary about this English rock band who is kind of on the cusp of breaking up, but they're so silly and dumb and petulant and narcissistic that it's just kind of wonderful watching them fall apart and watching them just be complete morons. And
people thought that they were a real band, you know. People actually bought into it and thought that they were real.
And you could take any scene, you could take nearly every other scene from this and it could be your best bit. And I went through the whole thing and I jumped and I skipped. But the one scene I came to that I just found was beautiful and kind of typified everything about this film was a scene where they're in the green room, their dressing room, and they're just about to go on stage, right?
Well, we've kept them waiting long enough. Let's do it, Tom.
Come on, Mick! Let's go, Mr. Shrimpkin! Rock and roll!
And what happens is the stage manager comes in, okay guys, let's go, and they go out, yeah, woo woo, and they're banging and
it's
going to
be a hot one, isn't it?
It's
going to
be great. No, it's not an exit,
we've got one
at
exit.
They get lost.
Rock and roll.
Rock and roll. And they go wandering in circles around the innards.
Right, show the group that's playing tonight.
You go right straight through this door here, down the hall.
Yeah.
Turn right.
Yeah.
And then there's a little jog there, about 30 feet. Jog to the left.
We don't have time for that.
Go straight ahead.
We'll trust you. We'll trust you.
Go straight ahead.
Yeah.
Turn right the next two corners. And the first door you sign, authorized. Personnel only.
Yeah.
Open that door. That's the stage.
You think so?
You authorize. You're bringing musicians, aren't you?
Yeah.
All right. Thank you. Thank you very much. Rock and roll. All right.
Rock and roll.
Yeah. Let's get it.
No, this way.
Straight
rock
up.
And roll.
Rock and roll. There we go. Hello, Cleveland. Hello, Cleveland.
And they even meet a janitor guy and he says, well, what way is the stage? And he's going, and he gives them terrible directions and they follow his right and they end up right back with him again.
You must have made a wrong turn.
We've got to go another way.
What I love about it is this energy that they go out with. And this kind of like has kind of like stereotypical kind of rocky
bravado.
Stuff, like, you know, yeah, whoa, and then just you see that energy just peter off, and the crowd is waiting for them upstairs, and they're just losing all that energy. And when they get the new directors, they try and rebuild that energy again. They go, yeah, whoa, whoa, and it just fucking dissipates again. And it's brilliant.
It's absolutely brilliant.
And it's kind of like this kind of the structure of this film is like all this rock, real rock energy, and it just the balloon is just deflating.
It's just exposing all the artifice of it, isn't it? And just how vulnerable they really are.
True. And useless, and how completely innocent and clueless. I suppose clueless is the right word. They are. They can't even make their way from their dressing room to the stage, you know, they're just completely clueless.
Do you know what?
can I tell you what my pick is then?
Yeah.
Because it sort of has the same similar energy in that it's about the artifice sort of falling away. And it is from For Your Consideration, the
okay.
I think it's the third one that he did. But it's when Catherine O'Hara's character, who has been tipped for the Oscar, basically loses the nomination. And Fred Willard, the sort of the amazing, fantastic Fred Willard, he turns up to interview her outside our house. And she is absolutely langers drunk after having her dreams dashed.
Oh, wrong house.
No, the right house.
I didn't get
we
nominated.
Want to talk to Marilyn Heck. Marilyn Heck. And trash. What a juxtaposition.
Nominated.
We know that. And what happened?
What
but the
was
important
that?
Thing is people, if you get close to being nominated, that's
no,
what it's all
it's
about.
It's all right. It's a big tease. Because 4 out of 5 of those girls are going to lose big time.
Can I ask
way
you?
Way worse than me today. I didn't even get nominated. I'm not going to lose.
What happened? But what happened?
I'm not going to lose. All right. How can I think I'm going to win if I'm not nominated?
That's what I mean. You came this close
Stop
to being
it.
Nominated. I don't think you could have done
that. I'm going to go to France.
That's what for?
How'd the French girl get in?
Oh, well, that French movie drives me nuts with the writing on the screen.
And that's French.
I always think it's late breaking news.
French. It's not legal. Jesus. Then I'm going to come back and they're going to say, oh, la la, French foreign. You're so
all right,
let's give you all the awards. Yeah, and I'll say, fuck you.
Whoa,
you didn't
yeah, well.
No, even know it's me.
No, I'm sure.
Yeah. Go see Frenchie.
I think they did a wonderful job. Best of luck.
I got so much food. Come on.
Marilyn Heck. Now I know what it feels like to stare down into the Grand Canyon. Chuck Porter.
And it is
Hollywood
a spectacularly
saying,
brilliant performance from Catherine O'Hara, where she is, there's so much pathos and so much specificity about the character that she's playing. And it's some of the best drunk acting there's ever been, but it's so funny. But it's I think that would be my favorite scene, and it's just pure performance. And it's another one where the genius of the mock doc is sort of celebrating something that you wouldn't see in any other movie.
Oh man, I'm so glad you brought that up for two reasons, because I'm not going to discuss For Your Consideration, but I certainly am going to discuss Catherine O'Hara down the road here. And that leads me nicely into my next pick, because I think that Christopher Guest then, he went and created a perfect trilogy or three films of mockumentaries.
Yeah.
The first being Waiting for Guffman.
Mm-hmm. Amazing.
And I just rewatched this at the weekend. And it is wonderful. It is an absolutely beautiful little mockumentary, and it feels like its heart is in the right place. Sometimes these mockumentaries can be a little bit mean-spirited, and maybe rightly so, because of the subjects that he's covering, like, you know, in Spinal Tap, there's these arrogant, self-centered musicians. But in Guffman, it's a story about a small little community, amateur drama group, and they're putting on performance of a show about commemorating the 150-year anniversary of the town, and they get word that an assistant from a Broadway producer is going to come and be there on opening night, and they've got one night to put have basically one night to make all their dreams come true. And it's all run by ex-Broadway kind of expert called Corky St. Clair, who's played by Christopher Guest. And he's definitely not gay. He's definitely married. But it's so obviously a ruse, because he's blown in from New York and he's come into this very conservative town. But what I love about it is that he ends up with his main cast. He has kind of like the first kind of like his main cast is made up of his regular kind of performers, his regular collaborators, and the guys of Eugene Levy, Catherine O'Hara, Fred Willard, Parker Posey, and Christopher Guest mainly, like, you know. But the scene I picked from Waiting for Guffman is the audition scene. And it's a scene where Eugene Levy is a dentist. And he's got hopes and dreams of one day performing on the stage. And he comes in and he performs this musical rendition of like several songs.
Hi. Thank you. Maybe just. I dream of Jeannie with the light brown hair. Floating like a vapor on the soft summer air.
Look out. Camp Town racers sing this song. Doo-dah, doo-dah. Camp Town racetrack 5 miles long. Oh, doo-dah day. Gwynned run all night. Gwynned run all day. Bet my money on the bobtail nag. Somebody bet on the bay. Bay, bay, bay. Way down upon the Swanee River.
Well, what I love about it is at the very end of it, it goes on for a little bit. At the very end of it, when he finishes, we kind of cut to, he walks out and we cut to the kind of the judging panel, which is like Corky St. Clair and the musical director and another assistant. And they both turn to each other. Instead of kind of going, oh, that's awful, they go,
he's good.
Whoa, he's cocky. Whoa, you didn't know he had that in him. You know, that's sort of way that their bar has gone so low. But what's so funny about it is just Eugene Levy is just so brilliant and he's so funny. And to be able to sing that kind of like just not very good, kind of slightly bad, actually takes a lot of skill and a lot of talent. But did you know, Kevin, how important Eugene Levy is in this collaboration? And or that Eugene Levy is the guy who he kind of basically co-wrote Waiting for Guffman, Best in Show and A Mighty Wind.
Yeah, but I would say that all the performers, his company of actors, are basically writing those movies with him because they may have, yes, a, you know, an outline of what the story is going to be about, but the genius, some of the lines that they come out with, all improv, so the cast are basically writing those characters.
You're absolutely right, and from the research I did do, it actually turns out that they don't do any rehearsals. They literally show up and they perform, that whatever comes out of their mouth is captured on camera. And
it's
the
incredible
story. Yeah, it's a bare outline of a story, but the writing, as we've kind of discussed in previous episodes, the film is made in the editing. And in the case of Waiting for Guffman, an interesting thing happened, which Christopher Guest, basically in his first cut of the film, he had cut his character Corky St. Clair pretty much out of the film.
Mm.
And Eugene Levy, who was his kind of collaborator, his storytelling collaborator in this, said to him, says, I think you're missing a beat here. And he said, do you mind giving me a shot at editing the film?
Oh, I didn't
know
that.
So Eugene Levy went in. Yeah, Eugene Levy was the one who actually went in and kind of reintroduced or reinstated and put the focus on Corky St. Clair, because he is kind of the linchpin of this. He's the heart of this community. And all of a sudden the film works. And it's a beautiful film. Mm. It's a really lovely film because the performance that they put on, the show that they put on is actually better than you expect it would be.
Yeah.
You know, but from all the rehearsals, you think this is going to be a disaster. But when it actually goes on, they're actually not bad. They're actually quite entertaining. And the people, the community, love Corky. And Corky has put on successful shows in the past. And he's kind of become their storyteller. He's become their kind of the heart of that community in an unusual way. And you feel it from, like, people in the audience are crying at some of the stuff that's happening on stage. And it's very endearing.
You don't expect that turn, do you? Where it becomes about sort of, it becomes much more heartfelt rather than,
yeah,
than mocking or making fun of the characters for their lack of ability, yeah, or their naivety.
Yeah, exactly. And I know, like, from living in, like, up here, we live in a small community, and there's some brilliant drama stuff and musical stuff that goes on. But when you go, it's all completely, you know, completely amateur. But when you go to it, even though it's, like, not Broadway stuff, when you go to it, there's a sense of joy on seeing your neighbours on stage in a different guise. And a sense of, well, fair play to them for doing that. Fair play to them for giving it a go, like, you know. And you enjoy it. You enjoy it as much as you would going to see a great film in the cinema. And that's kind of the essence that you capture in Waiting for Guffman, where it's not sneery, it's not looking down. But no, it's the joy of physical performance in front of you and kind of like seeing something being created in front of you. And it's being a part of a community. I think that's really what it is. And I think that's what he captures, and he doesn't condescend and he doesn't patronise.
Yeah.
I think it's a lovely little film. It really is.
It is.
I highly, highly recommend. And it's very easy. Well, maybe it's hard to find. I actually don't know.
No, it's everywhere.
It's everywhere. Waiting for Guffman is very good. So now that brings me on to my next, and I'm not going to spend too much talking about the next one, but the next one is the second film in this kind of like trilogy, I would call.
Mockumentary trilogy. I know where you're going, and I think everyone knows where you're going, because there are only two amazing mockumentaries that I think, in terms of mainstream appeal, that everyone would bring up. And we've already mentioned one of them. So,
yeah,
I think I know what the number one is going to be.
Okay. The other one is, the next one is Best in Show, of
what?
Course.
What? Wait.
And, yeah.
That's wrong. Yeah. You're wrong, Will.
Am I wrong? You're wrong. Where did I go so wrong?
You're wrong.
Where did I go? Do you not like Best in Show?
No, Best in Show has got to be the number one.
I'm going Best in Show number two.
That's definitely outrageous.
And I've
You're
got a
totally
reason.
Wrong about that, because I'll tell you why. You could take any scene from Best in Show and it would be the best mockumentary scene. There's just so many to choose from.
Okay. Well, Kevin, I watched Best. I would actually say I've watched Best in Show more than any other of these films.
You'd just be a contrarian.
I'm genuinely reacting to the experience. Up to this weekend, I probably would have gone Best in Show, right?
Okay.
But I watched these films over the weekend, and I've got something to say. I've got a take. And Best in Show is wonderful. Best in Show is a comfort film for me.
Definitely.
And Best in Show is like, it's a film you can put on and you can just get just drawn into these characters, and you can spend a lovely 90 minutes in their company and feel like you've just been in a nice, warm, cozy sofa.
It also has the wonderful addition of Jennifer Coolidge and Jane Lynch into that company of actors. And he's worked on them again and again since
then. You've got that scene where Jennifer Coolidge is talking about her wealthy, wealthy but very elderly husband.
We could spend all time talking or not talking.
We both like soup. I love that.
There's also a bit where Jane Lynch is like talking about her mother and how much her mother cared for the family until she committed suicide in 1981, and it's just a deadpan sort of delivery of it. It's just so good, and they just come up with that like on the cuff. They're geniuses, that whole group of people. They're so fucking talented.
I love it. I absolutely love it. It's and they stay in character and they just deliver, and the improvisation is just incredible.
It's a joy to watch.
As I think, Kevin, you're right. You could pick any one of these, any scene from this film, and it would be a best of bit. But the bit I went for, because I'm not mentioning it, I haven't really mentioned him up to now, and I think he deserves a mention, because he's appeared in all these films, including This Is Spinal Tap, and it's Fred Willard.
God love him. He was amazing.
Rest in peace, Fred. You're fantastic.
You are, Fred.
And he's fantastic.
He was just such a warm personality on screen. There's a few of those actors where they just pop up and you just like them no matter what. John Candy was another one.
Yeah.
But Fred Willard was just always like, just love to see him in a film.
Yeah, absolutely. And he's in this as my favourite performance of his in any of these films is in Best in Show. And I kind of said, I got to go to his performance as the out of his depth commentator at this Krupp's like dog show.
Now what is that? That's a bloodhound, isn't it?
I think this is a tremendous dog, and I would say maybe in 2 to 3 years this could be a champion dog, but I just think it may be a tad immature for this year.
Just trying to get a little playing time in.
And take your dog down and back for me, please.
You know what would be funny? I don't know if they can do this. Just an idea off the top of my head. Why did he put on one of those Sherlock Holmes hats and put a little pipe in his mouth? Are they ever allowed to do anything like that, dress up a dog in a funny way?
No, that's not quite what the purpose of these shows is.
But I think it would really get the crowd going. You know what I mean? The Sherlock
Absolutely.
Holmes hat with the pipe. I don't know if you could make it look like smoke's coming out of the pipe.
I think that would be a little dangerous.
I'd get a kick out of it.
He's so good.
Yeah.
That's why that film works so well, is just the inconsistency of this guy coming on and treating it like it's a sport event. It's so funny. It's so brilliant.
Now that looks like a fast dog. Is that faster than a greyhound?
Well,
if you put him in a race, who would come in first? If you had a little jockey on him going... let me ask you this. If you're going to put him on a football team, which would be your wide receiver, which would be your tight end? Who can go the farthest, the fastest?
Well, I don't know any dogs that play football.
I'm having some fun with you.
Yeah. Oh, he's fantastic. And it's a fantastic film.
It really is.
But now, Kevin, I'm going to bring you to my best bit of all these best
bits. I'm shocked.
And it was as much a surprise to me as it is to you right now hearing this, right?
But
my best bit comes from...
Say, I think I'm figuring out what your take is. It's not making sense to me. Let me put it that way.
Okay. Right. Well, my best bit is from what I consider to be Christopher Guest's final great film in this run of three mockumentaries. And it's from A Mighty Wind. And A Mighty Wind is this... It's the least funny of these three films.
Mm.
But it is honestly one of the loveliest and sweetest. And it's...
Because of that relationship,
I would say it's... That fucking relationship, Kevin. The relationship between... Well, the story, first of all, for anyone who hasn't seen A Mighty Wind. So I suppose a lot of people actually haven't watched A Mighty Wind compared to Spinal Tap and Best in Show. But it's a story about basically a group of 60s-era folk musicians and who have all basically been inspired by the death of their former manager to get back together on stage for one final concert in New York's Town Hall. So there's like this big coming together of these three bands.
As I travel down the back roads, I miss home I love so much.
Every carpenter and cowboy,
every late man on a crutch, they're all talking about a feeling, about a taste that's in the air. They're all talking about this mighty wind that's blowing everywhere. Oh, a mighty wind's a blowing.
The kind of the center, the linchpin of the whole thing, and the most famous of these bands is a couple, Mitch and Mickey, and they're played by Eugene Levy and Catherine O'Hara. And it was the film in which I, watching it last night, my heart broke and my heart just was elevated watching Catherine O'Hara because she's absolutely incredible.
She is.
Straits and penis clamp. I'm a musician again.
And she was sort of like in the background until, like, career wise, she was always sort of like the best friend or the mother or the, you know, she got to shine in the Christopher Guest films, but with Schitt's Creek, she sort of had a resurgence. But she's always been brilliant, always been amazing.
You think back, like, from Home Alone, I think she's, like, very famous from Home Alone, being the mom there, but, you know, and you would kind of almost typecast her, kind of go, oh, that's that mom, but you don't realise all the roles she's played.
Yeah, from Second City onwards.
And I'm delighted that she's gotten such acclaim, and deservedly so, for her performance in Schitt's Creek, and I'm delighted that it's come in a relationship between herself and Eugene Levy, because watching those films, you see that herself and Eugene Levy have always had this wonderful relationship on screen, this amazing chemistry, this natural, effortless flow and love for each other, which is completely apparent. And what I love about A Mighty Wind is that it's a film that doesn't go for the easy laughs all the time, and that's really apparent in the Mitch and Mickey storyline. Catherine O'Hara's character appears on screen, she's carrying her. She has no funny line in this entire film. She's got no funny gag, but I absolutely know that her character is so real and believable, and so full of kind of beautiful poetry and music, and she's so quiet and still and very, you know, she seems like a true folk singer, if you know what I mean.
Yeah,
someone who's shy, who's very naturally shy, but has this talent to be able to create magic through her song. And the storytelling of this is so simple as well, because as I've already laid out, it's a reunion tour, but they need to get all these bands back together. And the one they need is Mitch and Mickey. But Mitch and Mickey fell out in the mid-70s. They were a couple, but they fell out dramatically. And poor Mitch just broke him. It completely broke him. And for this reunion tour to work, they have to come together. And they have this iconic song. At the end of A Rainbow, I think was the name of the song. But there's a pivotal moment in that song, in the performance of that song, where they kiss.
They do it.
And
at
the whole film.
They do it at the Oscars as well. Everyone applauded. They have to kiss.
Oh, man. It's so beautiful. And it's so pivotal in this whole film that they get on stage and they perform this song. And you, as an audience member, as if watching this film, you are wondering, are they going to kiss? And you want them to kiss. And it's the scene of them on stage performing that song. And I'm not watching it like all the other films, laughing my ass off, going, oh, these are ridiculous and this is, you know, that's hilarious or whatever. This was something where I was like going, this is true love. I'm seeing an improvised true love happening on screen. And it's happening because of the relationship between Eugene Levy and Catherine O'Hara and how absolutely fantastic they are, incredibly are. And it's a lovely, lovely, lovely little film. So that's why I have no choice but to go for the obvious choice in Christopher Guest, but the not so obvious choice of the final scene in Mighty Wind. So that's my best pick, Kevin.
Fantastic. Fantastic.
My sweet, my dear, my darling, you're so far away from me. Though an ocean of tears divides us, let the bridge of our love span the sea.
Yeah. So, Kevin, that was... Yeah, that was my pick, and I don't regret it. Are you regretting the fact that I didn't pick Best in Show?
No, of course not. I'm actually really looking forward to watching A Mighty Wind though. After that, I thought that was a lovely sort of a celebration of not just Catherine O'Hara but of Christopher Guest and the company of actors and that story itself. So I'm raring to go. I don't know what I'm saying. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, we've got business to do. We've got business, you know, to be
okay, but keep in mind, I'm still editing fight scenes, so please. Please.
6 months later, Kevin is still editing fight scenes. Poor Kevin.
Okay, well, spin
right,
it.
Right, okay. Are you ready for this pain? Are you ready for pain? Okay. And we're spinning. spinning. And... Okay, Kevin.
Yes.
You ready for this?
No.
So your your topic for next week is best post-credit scene.
Oh.
Well, okay. What do you think?
Okay.
Best post-credit scene.
It's
right.
Okay. Best post-credit scene. Okay. There's no other podcast that's doing
bad,
that.
That's actually. But you know what? That's not bad because they're so. You know, there's so few of them. There's not that many, I don't think.
I can only think of the Marvel ones at the moment. I'm going to have to do some research.
Oh, there's more. The easiest and most obvious and best answer to this is the post-credit scene in He-Man and the Masters of the Universe.
Oh, God. Where they promised Skeletor that they were going to come back and they never did.
Yeah. Frank Langella pops his head back up. I'll be back. You know, so that was it.
No. Lion bastards. Okay, best post-credit scene. Well, okay, yeah, I can handle that. I think I can handle that.
Yeah, man. You need it. You need something that's not, you know, best drama scene, Kevin. Best dramatic scene ever.
Best debt scene. Be here all week.
So, Kevin, let's kill this podcast. Where can people find you?
They can find me... huddled over the laptop editing fight scenes, but also on Twitter at Kevin Lee Han. And where can they find you, Will?
They can find me, you know, rewatching A Mighty Wind and also on Twitter under Willem's Film, WILLUMSFILLUM. And you can find our show's podcast Twitter handle under Best Bits at Best Bits Pod, isn't
that us? Is. And also, you can send us emails, you know. Well, hopefully just one email, but at bestbitspodcast@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you, so email us. And of course, as always,
we want to hear your picks.
Like, share, subscribe, rate, review us. Get the word out there, because we would love more and more people to be listening to us or discovering us, I guess is a better way to put it. But that's the sales pitch over. See you next week.
And thanks. Yes, that's and hey, thanks to all the people who are getting in touch with us, and so many people who are, you know, loving the podcast, and we really appreciate
it's millions
all
now.
Of your comments.
It's so many
millions. Wow,
we can say that because
oh
it's mock
God.
Doc. It's all fake.
It's the greatest podcast in the history of the universe. Imagine that, so soon as
it
well.
It actually is. I love it.
Kevin, that was good. Kevin, that was surprisingly hysterical. It was so much fun. Goodbye, everyone. Hope you enjoyed it.
See ya.
The Best Bits podcast is produced by Will and Kevin.
All audio clips and music heard in this episode is the intellectual property of the respective copyright holders, and no infringement is intended.
If you enjoyed this episode, please like, share, subscribe, rate, review, all that good stuff.
If you have any notes, comments, scene suggestions, or just want to get in touch with us, email us at bestbitspodcast@gmail.com.
And here is a clip from the lads' latest Mini Bits bonus show. The full episode, plus 100 more, are available on their Patreon.
Mini Bits.
Another new episode.
Talk to you, stupid ones.
Patreon podcast.
Of this Patreon podcast. Exclusive.
Exclusive.
The Best Bits podcast with Will and Ken. Bonus content for you. This is for you, not for them, just for you. The Best Bits podcast with Will and Ken. Exclusive content. You are the talking films and shows. The Best Bits podcast. This is for you.
Kevin, how are you?
Hi, honey. How are you?
Oh, you know, I've got this. I've got my corns sorted out. I went to the chiropractor the other day, and she
your
said,
"Corn,
my corns. Did you ever get corns?
No.
Did you know what a corn is?
Yeah, it's a bunion on your foot, isn't it?
Yeah, like in between your toes and stuff like that.
Do you not wear any shoes like around the house? You walk
no,
barefoot.
No, it's the opposite.
GA shorts.
It's the opposite. I wear incredibly tight shoes, like those Chinese women.
Oh,
who get their feet bound, who had their feet bound, like, you know, before the turn of this last century. And so they had incredible corns and bunions. This is a great opener for a Mini Bits episode where we get people disgusted.
Squally, it's episode 73 of the Mini Bits. I'm Kevin, you're Will. This is our Patreon podcast. Thank you to all our lovely patrons. Yeah. A few of you have jumped in recently. I don't know what we said. We try to goad people into joining up every single episode, and then every so often it's like a lot of people join because of one specific episode, and I'm like, how did we say on that episode is different to the other 270 episodes.
Maybe it didn't sound as desperate. Maybe we said don't join. Maybe reverse psychology. That's how we should do it. Reverse psychology. Don't join up to our patron. Don't. It's
cancel. Everybody cancel.
You don't deserve to be in this group. We don't want you. We don't like the look of
you. We don't need anybody.
It's just us. It's absolutely just us. Hey, should we tell people, we did, I don't know, maybe we shouldn't say it on mic, especially so early. We did an interview with the Irish Examiner last Friday.
We did.
Yeah.
And
how do you think I did?
I think you did all right. Like, you didn't interrupt me once, so I was delighted with how I came across. But, you know, there's no sort of time limit on this. We don't know when it's going to get posted. One of our friends was saying, Kathy at the cinema was saying that their interview with, did they do the Examiner as well? It was six months before it posted.
And the Guardian, I'm pretty sure. They were profiled in the Guardian as well.
Yeah, but we don't do any really promotion. Like, we don't do anything.
Well, this is our first time getting any sort of like proper coverage, which is going to be mad. So listen to all you listeners who have found us before we explode. You're an OG.
Bust.
You're an OG listener before Kevin starts getting gold chains from all his Patreon dash.
I think I'm more of a silver than a gold. I think my undertones suit more silver. But
I just want to die.
Goes with Prince Albert.
Your hat?
Yeah.
I want one of those diamond studs in my tooth. That's all I want. So I can go bing whenever I'm on a call.
Oh, yeah.
Bing.
I usually just, you know, wink and like glint.
Yeah.
Like a starlight twinkle.
Speaking of which, I interrupted you. What did you want to speak of? Which?
Start the timer.
Oh! I forgot.
You may as well.
Start the timer.
All these lucky loos are listening in and they're wondering, what are we going to be talking about? But we have to start talking about them after.
Yeah.
we say goodbye. But look, I wanted to talk to you about, well, you've seen a few things. You've seen the new Godzilla film.
Yes.
I've seen the first Omen. I saw Scoop as well.
We're looking Netflix forward to watching thing. That. We already see, okay.
Okay, I'll save my thoughts. And what else did I see? I made notes, but sure, it doesn't really matter.
I think I saw it.
And I was going to go through all the summer releases and see what takes your fancy.
Okay. I'm looking forward because I don't actually know what's on the horizon. So
Well, the Joker 2 trailer came out today.
I saw it. Yes, I watched that.
Mm-hmm. It reminded me of Chicago.
Yeah, it's kind of like you see it's all very much in the mind's eye. They're calling it a jukebox musical. Am I right in saying that?
I think you're right in saying that.
So, look, hey, listen. What it did remind me of was that I want to rewatch The Joker because I saw it in the cinema and I thought it was fine. It was kind of a bold new direction.
I'm just going to go back and watch the episodes from the Batman 66 show. The Joker episodes.
Oh, yeah, that's going
to
be...
Just to fill me in, like, on the lore. Get up to speed.
Get you right up to speed. And you'll be there going, where are all the guys in the purple suits with the masks? When are they going to show up? And, like,
isn't it a weird time, though, where we have the Penguin TV show with Colin Farrell coming out, which is a totally different canon version of the Penguin. Then you have this offshoot of Joker, which isn't... its own universe entirely.
Mm.
And then you have the old Batman films that you can watch.
Right.
And, I don't know where I'm going with this, but it's just, I don't know. I'm kind There's of so many IP.
But like,
it's just everywhere.
What's happened is the comic book world has very much entered the film world. It's where you could have different runs, totally different runs of a character by it's different insane. Authors. And there'd be totally different riffs on it and stuff. Oh, this is the thing. Kevin, so I'm only catching up on this. You mentioned it to me on a podcast. Was it on one of those?
It was the last main show. It was the last mini bits.
You said everyone's describing stuff as insane recently.
And have you started noticing it though?
Only with people trying to rise you. That's the only place where I've noticed people on Discord are trying to rise you.
Oh my god! Oh my god! I could start posting now, like tweets, comments, TikToks. Articles, anything. Insane is everywhere. This is insane. That's insane. It's insane. There was a festival just going on about this insane lineup. I was like, oh, it's a mentally ill lineup. Okay. It's just, it's everywhere. And the other thing, do you know the other thing that's also bothering me lately?
Wow.
And this has been bothering me for years and years and years. It used to be that everyone used to misspell definitely. They'd go defiantly.
Okay.
Oh, it's defiantly whatever. It would just, they're morons. But no. I just keep noticing everyone keeps spelling a lot as one word, A-L-O-T, a lot. Where have they gotten into their heads that a lot is one word? It's the same way that people will write every time as one word.
What's the one that you've pulled me up on a few times and I can't get it right? Compliment.
Compliment.
I can't get it right. It's like
because I told you the other day.
Yeah, and I went searching for it and I couldn't find it because I had to use it.
If there's an I in compliment, it's I'm paying you a compliment.
That's a good way to remember it. Okay, good. And then compliment.
I wrote that to you.
But you did, and I went to try and find it because I found myself writing the word compliment. And I went, shit, Kevin.
But you gave me a thumbs up, which meant in my world that, yeah, I read that. Thanks.
But I did, right? I'm talking about a couple of days later when I was faced with the exact same hurdle of writing the word compliment. I went, okay, what did Kevin say again about compliment? There's an I and the E. What did he say? So I went searching for it and I found it, I think. And I went, the I is paying me a compliment or I'm giving you
it's
a compliment.
It's insane how little you can retain information. It's insane.
Come here, let's start talking about what we watched. Come on.
Did you start the timer?
Yeah, it's gone. It's ticking. It's ticking down. The world's going to explode.
You know, I have to put in the sound effect. I have to line up all my sound effects.
When you said start the timer,
I have a whole soundboard here. Okay. Jesus Christ, where's my fucking...
What?
Where's my ding dang ding?
Here we go. The timer has started. There we go.
Yeah. Right.
Okay! Right.